real limited period between two successive events where we entered the world, we leave the world, and you know, and all of us are conscious of time, and you know, we have our watches, cell phones, and you know, probably you'll look at the time while I'm teaching, and but time is something that you know, we deal with every day, you know. Especially, you know, when you pastor and preach, people don't really watch your time, you know. And, you know, so it's a common question, what time is it? You know, this was just a common question that people, you know, ask all the time. And, you know, and sadly, most people are more concerned about what time is it than really what they do with their time. And, you know, so this ought to remind us that, you know, how important our time is. You know, I told our church a while back, I've made this statement a few times, I said this to our leaders, and I said, you know, that some of you are not old enough to have done this yet, but there comes a place in your life where you stop looking at how many years you've lived, and you start thinking about how many you have left, you know, and I said, so some of you ain't got a clue about that one yet, but you will. You'll get there, you know. You'll come to the place where it's no longer, you know, how many have I lived, but, you know, really, how many do I have left? And I want to make an impact, you know, and leave an influence and a footprint, you know, when I leave this world. And whether we like it or not, time is running out. You know, time is running out on us. The clock is ticking. Time is, you know, life is slipping away. That's not morbid. It's just the way it is, you know. You know, we have, you know, Janice and I have not as young as we used to be. I'm enjoying this stage of our life better than any stage with grandkids and those things. But you know, I want to leave a footprint, not for my sake, but for the sake of the generation that's coming behind us that need to know this gospel. And this is what this whole thing is about, today and tomorrow, is about empowering leaders and empowering people to you know, lead. And because, you know, one of these days we will walk off of this planet. You know, Jesus either will come or we'll die. But we're going to leave the planet, and, you know, what are we going to leave behind? So two things we know about time in your notes there. One, it goes by quickly. You know, let me give you some encouragement from the book of Job. Like, that's look what it says here. It says in Job 7, verse 6, it says, my days come and go swifter than the click of a knitting needles. Then the yarn runs out, an unfinished life. That's real encouraging. Yeah, Job 9, 25 and 26, he says, my time is short. What's left of my life races off too fast for me to even glimpse the good. My life is going fast. It's like a ship under full sail, like an eagle plummeting to its prey. And we know that James called it a vapor. You know, he said it appears for a little while and then it's gone. And you know, I wouldn't really necessarily encourage you to do this. I did it, but there's a website called deathclock.com. And if you go to that website, you put in your birthday, it'll tell you down to the second how many seconds you've lived, how many years you've lived, how many days you lived. And then if you put in, you know, a projected ever how long you think you'll live, you'll live to be 90 or 100 or whatever, it'll tell me how many you have left. And that's kind of morbid. And Janice is definitely not going to that website. So I did. But anyway, but, you know, really, what you do we have left is more important than what you've used. You know, we can't go back and undo what we haven't done or didn't do, or the mistakes we made. So what we do with the time we have left is more important than what we've already used up. Psalm 90, verse 4 says, 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that's just gone by, like a watch of the night. So in other words, time is nothing to God, but we know time is something to us. Another thing we know about time is, number two, is time should be used wisely. You know, and the only way to use it wisely is to understand their purpose. And, you know, most people are stuck in the cycle, you know, of, you know, having life with really no meaning or purpose to it whatsoever. And you know, when you're young, you know, Of course, nobody here ever thinks that anymore. But when you're young, you think the point of life is you. You think that you're the point. The whole universe, revolves around you. But the older you get, the more you realize that that type of thinking is real empty. And it doesn't really mean anything. And so this Psalm chapter 90, if you read the whole thing, and we won't, but it's a Psalm of Moses. And so, he grew up in a palace, and then he goes out into the wilderness and so he's out there tending the sheep and all this stuff, but they really didn't seem like there was a lot of purpose to what he was doing. Then one day God spoke to him and said, I do have a plan. I've got something that I want you to do. And I look at scripture in Psalm 90, verse 11. It says, and I don't remember the translation this is, but it says, if we could see God as he really is, we would happily give him his due, which means we would give him our lives. If we could see clearly the purpose that God has for life and what he wants us to leave behind, it'd be real easy to give him our life. And then again, that verse in Psalm 90, verse 12, teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. The number of days, we number days in a lot of stuff in life, weddings, to the birth of a baby or whatever. And Ronna said, man, she got bigger since last night. I don't know about half a man, but it's like, I said, whoa, we may make it through today. But we number the days to our vacation. We number the days to the conference. We number the days to this. We number the days to that, And really when we number our days, we make better decisions with our time. Anything that we think we have an unlimited amount of, we waste. And, as I'm getting older, Janice isn't, but as I'm getting older, somebody saw us a while back and they saw, man, Janice, you look great. And they looked at me and said, what in the blank happened to you? It's like, thank you for the encouragement. But really what the psalmist is saying and what I'm saying is, Lord, give us wisdom to use the days we have left the way they should be used. Because our life is so brief. In scope of things, if you live to be 100, it's nothing. It's nothing. And, so maybe we should begin, and this will lead into really what I want to talk about. Maybe we should really begin living with the end in mind. And maybe if we did, we would make better choices in our life. And so I want to use the days that I have left, and I plan on living a long time yet, but whatever that is, I want to use the days that I have left wisely. And one of the things that I want to do is I want to invest it in people so that we can multiply our efforts with this gospel, so that when you and I do pass off the scene, that there's a generation like Joshua that can really take this thing to the promised land. So I want to give you this afternoon some wrong mindsets about leadership. Using that time part just to say, let's use our time that we have left wisely to invest it in the people around us so that we can leave a footprint, and leave something that's worthwhile behind. So, but there's some wrong mindsets about leadership that we have to deal with. The first one is, number one, this is my wrong mindsets that I've had, and maybe you have had. Number one, wrong mindsets about leadership. Number one, great leaders are good at everything. I used to think that, for many years I thought that great leaders are good at everything. And there's, you hear somebody, talk or whatever, And you look at them and you think, boy, they're just good at everything. They're just good at this or good at that. And that's really a real messed up mindset because that's not reality. The truth is we may be good at one or two or three, maybe four things at the most. Some of you may be four or five or whatever, but some of us it's just maybe one or two. But I really don't in any way think of myself as being a great leader. But one of the things that I'm realizing is that I'm good at a couple of different things, and I want to take those things that I'm pretty decent at, and I want to take those things and invest them, in other people. So a wrong mindset about leadership is we look at leaders and we think, if I'm going to be a great leader, that means I've got to be good at a lot of stuff. And really, you don't. You just got to find out what you're good at and focus in on what you're good at. You know, it's like the old Chinese proverb. I've used it for years and years. Is, you know, if you chase two rabbits at once, they both get away. And so you look at that and you think, if we just hone in on what we're really good at and empower people around us to do what we're not good at, man, it makes a world of difference. Wrong mindset number two is great leaders work at strengthening their weaknesses. Great leaders work at strengthening their weaknesses. And I can remember, you know, working hard. We talked about this a few years ago. Jackie said he was just going through listening to some of that again when we did that conference on your ministry sweet spot, you know. But I remember early in ministry, you know, working hard to turn my weaknesses into strengths. And you can't do that. You know, we really should try anything we want to try. But in the long term, success is not going to happen until we stick to working with our strengths. You know, trying to succeed in an area where you're weak will lead to frustration and burnout. You can't do it. God didn't call you to do it. Didn't call me to do it. And for many years, I tried to do that. I tried to strengthen the areas where I was just evidently and obviously weak. And I pulled this quote out of that when we did that conference, you know, back a few years ago down in Florida. You know, do not try to teach a pig to sing. Said it's a waste of time and annoys the pig. So, and I think sometimes that's what we've done to ourselves. We see an area where we're weak and we think, well, we just got to get this area stronger, rather than taking somebody that's around us and letting them fill in that spot where that we're just obviously weak, you know. And you know, and that's a real key, because, you know, when you think about, you know, trying to strengthen your weakness, it frustrates you, you know. It just, I mean, there's just certain things that just frustrate me to no end if I try to do them. Now, there's a time, of course, you know, when there's a place and time in ministry, you just got to do what you got to do and do it and, you know, and try to get grace for it and those things, but we're not necessarily talking about that. We're talking about, you know, you look at that area of weakness. Well, if I just get strong in this area, then no, maybe the key is we need to empower somebody else to do that stuff that we're not real good at. I mean, you know, I look at our staff and the people around us and you know, and they've got a lot of strengths that I just don't have those strengths, you know. And so, you know, a weakness, listen to this, a weakness will always be a weakness compared to your strength. And you can't do anything about that. You're not going to change that. You know, when you realize that you're maybe good at one or two, three, some of you may be talented enough to be good at four or five things. But if you really realize you're good at maybe two or three things, that's it. Then, you know, you start trying to find people to help you accomplish or work in those areas by which you're weak. Look at that scripture in your notes there in Jeremiah 1:5 in the Message Bible. It says, "Before I shaped you in the womb, I knew all about you." He says, "Before you saw the light of day," and I love the way the Message puts this, he said, "I had holy plans for you. A prophet to the nations is what I had in mind for you." Man, I love that when we were in our mother's womb, God had a plan for us. And sadly, a lot of times we've allowed external pressures to draw us out of the plan that God had for us because we're trying to be something that we're really not. You know, when we first started the ministry, we did a lot of things because we didn't have any options. You know, we're just, you know, we you go through the stages, you know, you do it yourself, and then you're looking for warm bodies, somebody with a pulse. And then, you know, just anybody, somebody, you know. Well, I got a police record, but how bad is it? You know. You know. You know. And so you go through those stages, you know, of life, and but when you first started out in ministry, you had no option. But you know, the older we get, the more fine tuned our responsibilities and parts should be. So, you know, when you start out, you know, we start out doing a lot of stuff, and as we get older and walk further in this thing, if we're, you know, equipping the people around us, you know, we should be fine-tuning this thing down we get to the end of our life, we're doing maybe one thing or two things at most, and those things are the things that only we can do. So let's look at some leadership lessons from Moses. You know, if you read Exodus 18, verse 1 through 27, we won't read the whole thing, but this is about 4 months into the journey. You know, Moses leading the children of Israel out of Egypt. And when he's on this journey leading the children of Israel, and he's doing this, and then he gets out there to a certain place, and his father-in-law brings his wife and his children out there to him. So his father-in-law shows up, and so he notices some mistakes that Moses is making in the way that he's leading the people. So let's look at that, his mistakes. Verse 13, tells us that he made himself judge of the people. In Exodus 18, 13, it says, "And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood by Moses from morning unto evening." And so, you know, his father-in-law, you know, it was kind of like bringing your father-in-law to work day, you know, and so his father-in-law shows up, you know, and they have a reunion, and, like we would all do with our father-in-laws, you know, and, you know, we ran out and kissed him and, you know, and hugged him. And so they did some sacrifice and had a meal and all this stuff. And so the next day, Moses goes to do the things that he had always been doing. So it's kind of like his father-in-law went to work with him that day. And it says, "And when it came to pass," and again that verse, it says, "on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people." He made himself a judge of the people. That's not what God never called him to be, the judge of the people. He let the circumstances press him out of what God had called him to do. You know, he took upon himself the role of a judge, and it really distracted him from his responsibilities. Now listen closely to this. It's easy to hold on to a task that we did early in ministry and allow it to keep us from leading and empowering others. In other words, just because we had to do that in the beginning of our ministry, we kind of hold on to that thing. And so Moses set himself up to be judge. This scripture just always gets me, you know. It says the people stood before Moses from morning unto evening. I mean, every day he gets up and faces the same thing, big line of people. Law hadn't been given yet. They didn't know you weren't supposed to steal chickens. So, you know, guy comes up, "He stole my chicken last week." Well, you're not supposed to steal chickens. Give his chicken back. And so he had to judge all these little things because there was no real law that, you know. And then after, you know, we see after that, he goes to the mountain and gets the law. I've been doing this series in our church called Grace Anatomy. And I said, you know, God gave Moses really like 613 laws. 10 of them are famous. But up until then, there was no real laws or standards of how you conduct your life. So here they are out in the middle of nowhere, you know. And so they don't, you know, "He stole my chicken." Well, he did this to, you know. And so all day long, that's what Moses was doing. But you know what? God never called Moses to do that. And so it took Moses away from what he should be doing. And here's the thing, and I hope I can explain this statement the way I want to in my heart. You know, when a leader stands still, a line begins to form. Now, here's what I mean by that. You know, if we don't have people around us to help us do those things, everybody's always going to be waiting on us for the answer. And every day when Moses got up, because he's the only one that was giving answers. He's the only one that he thought he's the only one that could give answers. So every day when he'd get up, the line forms. You know, and if we don't empower people, there's always going to be a line of people wanting answers, wanting decisions from us. And so he made a mistake, and the mistake that he made, he set himself up as judge. Number two, verse 14 tells us that his decision to judge was hurting the people. Verse 14 says, when Moses' father-in-law saw what he did to the people. Years ago, I read that verse of scripture and it just jumped off the page. Moses thought he was doing it for the people. Jethro said, "You're doing something to the people." When we become the one that everybody lines up in front of to get the decisions, to tell us what to do, when we become that person, we're not doing something for the people. We're doing it to the people. So Moses' father-in-law saw what he was doing to the people. You know, I'm sure Moses, you know, you think about Moses here, you know, and his father-in-law, you know, going to come see what he does, you know, and so he's probably feeling pretty proud, you know, all these people are depending on me, you know, everybody needs me, and You know, and all of a sudden his father-in-law, you know, says, you know, Moses, what is this thing you're doing to the people? Again, Moses thought he was doing it for the people. He said, why do you sit here alone? And all the people stand before you from morning unto evening. You know, often we make the same mistake. You know, I've done this. Well, you've done that. We often, you know, we in a different way, we make that same mistake. That we have to, you know, we got to give the answers. We got to have, you know, we've got to have the solutions. We got to, you know. And so, you know, so Moses again thought he was doing something for the people, but what he was doing was hurting the people. And if we don't empower people, we're hurting our people. Third mistake that he made, verse 14, we saw it, but let's read it. It says he did ministry alone. When Moses, father-in-law, saw all that he did to the people, he said, what is this thing you're doing to the people? Why sit thou thyself alone, and the people stand before you from morning to evening? So he was doing all this ministry by himself. Number four, verse 14, 15, he allowed everyone to come to him. Now look what it says here. It says, and Moses said to his father-in-law, said, why are you doing this? He said, because the people come to me to inquire of God, you know. They have a matter, and they come to me, and I judge between one and another. And, you know, you stole my chicken, and, you know, and you shouldn't, you know. And so he's making all these decisions. He said, also, I want to make them know the statutes of God. Number five, the mistake that he made was he was wearing himself and people out. Verse 17, 18, Moses' father-in-law saw, Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that you're doing is not good. Now watch what he says here. You will surely wear away both you and the people that is with you. For this thing is too heavy for you. He said, and you are not able to perform it alone by yourself. You can't do it this way. And, you know, probably if truth be known, and we'd all be honest, and we're all honest because we're preachers, you know, and if we're all honest about this thing, we've done the same thing. You know, we end up, you know, wearing our people out, wear ourselves out, and, you know, and at the end of the day, nobody's happy, and we're stressed, and all these things, and listen to this. Stress is seldom from having too much to do. Stress usually comes from what you're doing. Let me say it again. Stress is seldom from having too much to do. Stress usually comes rather from what you're doing. In other words, if you're busy in an area where you are strong, it doesn't stress you like trying to be busy in an area where you're not strong. You know what I mean? You have some of those days where you leave the office or whatever, and it's like you're energized, and there's some days it's like, golly, if I could do this every day. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. Anybody ever thought that lately? But stress is seldom for having too much to do, but rather what you're doing. He said you're going to wear yourself out, and you're going to wear out the people, you know, that are around you. And again, it goes back to because he was doing all these things by himself, so he made some corrections. And let's spend the next bit on these corrections. Verse 19 says, number one, he was willing to listen to advice. Now listen to what it says, verse 19. Now listen to me, Jethro said to him. Now listen to me. Let me tell you how to do this so that God will be in this with you. Well, your father-in-law, not just somebody in your church. He said, let me tell you how to do this, Moses. Let me tell you, Moses, this is how you need to do this. Now, I don't know if you've come to this revelation or not, but you're not the smartest person in your organization, but you're the leader. There's a huge difference. You know, you don't have to be the smartest person in the organization to be the leader. And the truth is, if you think you are, How many of you, if you're honest, you're in trouble? Golly, I think if I'm the smartest person around me, I'm in big trouble. But you're the leader. You know, one of the things I really admire about Moses here, he was willing to take advice. He was willing to listen. You know, he was willing to listen to advice because, you know, he was being worn out. You know, and a lot of times we take somebody giving us advice as challenging us. And again, how do they do it? You know, there's a way you do it. And I understand that. Believe me, you know. It's a lot easier to take advice if it's given as advice than somebody trying to shove something down your throat, you know. It's a huge, there's a huge, huge, huge difference. You know, we had a situation come up some time back and with one of our leaders, and they were very over the top critical about some stuff, and this person face to face would never communicate that way, but you know, it's easy to hide behind emails, and we should never do that. I've done it, made that mistake, but email and text and things like that should be used for information, not to express emotion, because you can't ask the email questions. Anyway, so this person sends this real nasty email. I don't know if y'all have ever gotten any of those or not, but and if you have it, you will. I'm just encouraging. So when I got this email, I was at home. So I was looking, you know, reading on my iPad. Jess comes in, sits down beside me, and says, what are you reading? Oh, it's an email. Who's it from? I said, and so I'm just kind of glanced at it real quick. I didn't read the whole thing, you know, just glanced at it. She said, what does it say? And I said, oh, it's just some suggestions. And because I didn't want her to see it, you know. So next day she comes into my office, and she says, she walks in my office, first thing, I want you to print that email out so I can read it. I said, you don't need to see it. I printed it out. Finally, you know, I knew I'm not going to not be able to not let her see it, you know. And a lot of things the guy said were true, but the way he'd said them was so over the top, negative, critical, I know more than God. You know, I'm thinking, we've been pastoring longer than you've been alive, dude. So Jess read that email, and she lost it. Lost it. And, you know, and one thing she said was, you know what? Even the good points, I don't want to take his good points because of the way he said it.
Yeah.
So we're talking about people giving advice. We're not talking about that way. We're talking about people giving advice in a way that doesn't attack you, doesn't tear you down. And so we've got to have those people around. And so Moses was willing to listen. There was a time in my life I wasn't willing to listen because I thought I had to have all the answers. I mean, if the answer to our problem comes from out there somewhere, and if we do not listen to advice, and we already saw that, and I'll talk about it again in a minute, we wear ourselves out. I mean, we wear ourselves out. We get emotionally spent. But he was willing to listen. Number two, verse 19 and 20 says, shows us that he refocused on his calling. Look what it says. It says, and again, his father-in-law speaking to him, be there for the people before God. Well, I thought that's what I was doing. No. And I'll talk about that in a second. But let the matters of concern be presented, and let those matters be presented to God. Your job is to teach them the rules and the instructions and to show them how to live and what to do. You know, many times in ministry, we get so busy doing what other people should be doing or could be doing that in the end, that we should empower them to do, that at the end, we have no time left to do what we should be doing, what we're called to do, what nobody else in the organization could do. And so really what Moses was supposed to be doing was representing the nation before God, not individuals. God never called him to sit and judge between people. Had a lady call me, what is today? Tuesday. So she called my assistant. Was she wasn't in her office. So the receptionist comes back to my office. She says, there's a lady who wants you to call her. She wants to talk to you. She's just like real adamant about she's got to talk to you about a problem in the church. And so I gave it to Melissa. I said, check it out and find out what it is. And, she knows how to handle that stuff. And so Melissa calls her, and this lady just like, I want to talk to the pastor. There's some church discipline that needs to be done. And so when Melissa told me that, I said, I'll call her because I want to hear what she's got to say, about church discipline, Anyway, so she sets in, about this certain person in the church, that she's dated some, and she's come to our church a few times, So she's talking about this certain person in our church that she's dated, and how this guy's living his life and what he's doing and all this stuff, and he just driving me crazy, he calls me I had to kind of, I didn't scream at her, but I had to raise my voice. Will you please be quiet so I can talk? So finally, she calms down, and I said, the question that I have for you is, if he bothers you so bad, why do you take his phone calls? Why do you answer his text message? Well, I had a restraining order put against him two times. I said, well, do a third one if he bothers you that bad. No, what I want to do, I want to come in, she told me all this stuff he's doing. She said, what are you going to do about it? I said, first thing is, I don't know that he's doing it. That's what you're saying. And she said, well, what I want to do, I want to get a meeting with me and him and you so we can talk about this. I said, that meeting is not going to happen. I said, I'm not meeting with you. That's kind of what they were doing with Moses. You said this, and that said this, and Moses, you decide. And I spent a lot of my ministry years, used to, I would respond, well, y'all, let's make an appointment, y'all can come in and talk, and take me away from what I should be doing to listen to your nonsense. It's like both of you are in sin, repent and get out of it, and have a better life next. Boy, and so when I went and meet with her, boy, it made her mad. I mean, she was like screaming, you don't believe in church discipline. You don't believe in, so you don't know what I believe in. I said, just because we don't discipline the way you like to see discipline. I said, first thing, the Bible teaches us that, if somebody sins, not bother anybody but themselves, let them figure it out. The consequences of teaching them some hard lessons. And if it starts affecting other people, we would deal with it, but we wouldn't do it the way you're wanting to deal with. I said, I'm not meeting with you. Why? Well, I know it'd be 2 hours of wasted time because there's no point, and it would take me away from what. And I used to would have done that because I felt like I had to be everything to everybody. See, Moses' responsibility was in a priestly manner, and he was to represent the nation to God, not individuals. He was to teach them the word and show them how to live. But yet he was spending all of his time doing stuff that kept him from doing what he should be doing. Number three. Third correction that he made was he accepted the advice. Look at what it says here in those verses. It says, then, again, his father-in-law is still speaking a lot of wisdom here. He says, then you need to keep a sharp eye out for competent men. Men who fear God, men of integrity, men who are incorruptible, and appoint them as leaders over groups organized by thousands, by hundreds, by 50, by 10. Notice what it says. They'll be responsible for the everyday work of judging among the people, not you. They'll bring the hard cases to you. But the routine cases, they'll be the judges. They'll share your load and will make it much easier for you. If you handle the work this way, you'll have strength to carry out whatever God commands you. And the people in their settings will flourish also. Wow. See what I'm talking about? If we don't empower people, we're not just hurting us, but other people are not going to flourish. I mean, we're hurting the kingdom. Then the fourth thing, he implemented the plan. Verse 24 says, Moses listened to the counsel of his father-in-law and did everything he said. And then number five, he replaced himself. It says Moses picked competent men from all of Israel and set them up as leaders among the people and organized them in thousands by hundreds, fifties, and tens. And they took the everyday work of judging among the people. They brought the hard cases to Moses. But of the routine cases, they were the judges. So the question that we have to ask ourselves is, are we doing things that other people could be doing because literally there is no one else to do it? And that's fine if that's the way it is. I mean, we all go through those points. Or is it just one of those things that we've really not tried to empower somebody else to do, tried to lead somebody else to do? You know, I'm probably more guilty than most in here with that in the earlier days of ministry, but it's so easy. Let me say another way. Sometimes it seems like it's so much easier just to do it yourself. Well, because they're not going to do it right anyway. You know, and if they're not going to, I'd rather do it myself and have to take time to teach them and train them, and, you know, and if I, in. And that's true for the short term, but it's not true in the long haul. Because listen to this: one of these days, if you're a pastor, you're not going to be a pastor of that church anymore. One way or the other. Like I tell our people, I say, "Well, somebody left the church." I said, "Well, everybody's going to leave his church at some point. They're going to start going to church somewhere else. They're going to die. So they're going to leave. Everybody's going to leave. Nobody's permanent." But, you know, but if we don't invest in train people around us when we do step out and step off or whatever happens, what's going to happen? You said?
I got a question.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, ask a question.
Like, you know, all of us probably have been in places where we've had basically to do it all. Okay? I mean, like, if it got done, we had to do
it.
And how do you identify when it's a sacrifice that you should do, or it's like it's a weakness that you're not letting someone else do it? What are some signs of that weakness, rather than just saying, if it doesn't get done, you know, we can't do it?
Well,
it won't get done. You know, if it won't.
I think, you know, Janice, if you want to help answer that question. Huh? You want to help answer that question?
Yeah. Where's that microphone?
No, but, you know, I think, you know, if it's really a weakness, and it's not that we just don't have anybody, you know. I think one of the real things is we really have to look at it. One is, am I just naturally good at this? Okay, you know, can somebody else do it? You know, I think Maxwell said 80% as well as we can. You know, so that's a couple of questions. But I think the bigger question that I've had to answer is, you know, or one of the indicators that it was pride or whatever. Was I was afraid they would not do it as good as me, and if they didn't, how it was going to make me look.
I think, Alan, if you have control issues across the board,
yeah,
in other areas of your life, there's probably a lot got to do with a control
issue. Yeah.
And a lot of times, strong leaders have control mm-hmm. issues.
Yeah. And that's true, and I'll repeat that. But and one of the things that Janice said, that if you have that control factor in other areas of your life. Because you know, however how you do it at home, it's what you're going to do it at church. You know, if you have to control everything at home, you got to control everything at church. And so, yeah, but I think that to me, the areas that I had to say, okay, this is an area where I'm just holding on to it because of pride, was because how would make me look if it didn't work out? You know, and as I become secure, I realize, you know what, they might not do as good as me. But you know what, that's going to free me up to do what I'm really better at. You know? It's like one of the things, you know, I can do okay. I mean, I can do pretty good, you know, at counseling ministers about ministry stuff. But counseling everyday stuff, I mean, I do okay, but I'm not good at it. But for a long time, I wouldn't let the people do it because I was afraid they might give bad advice. But at the end of the day, I would be drained. It's like I do it on Thursdays used to. It's like Thursday. I hated Thursday. I'd rather have a tooth pull with no Novocaine, man. It's like at the end of the day, it's like, please, if I have to do this for the rest of my life, I don't want to do this anymore. Then there's other people, they just get energy from it, you know, and that's good. That's good. That's good. So you let them do it. You know, and I'll talk some about this tomorrow in my session, but I'll tell you one of the ways you identify who your leaders are is how they make decisions. But you know what? You got to let them make decisions to find out if they are good at making decisions. And that's costly sometimes. Costly sometimes. But you know what? We have to. Somebody took a risk with us. You know? It's like God did, you know? Amen? So we gotta empower these people. We gotta work with the end in mind of replacing ourselves. You know, you know, illustration, and I know you know it and I've used it, but illustration is Joel Osteen stepping in for his dad. You know, I saw him on something just a few days ago, you know, and he was talking about when he stepped into that position. He'd always been the guy behind the camera and all that stuff, but no doubt he had sat under his dad for all those years, you know. And I mean, Joel is good, but he's not as good as the size of his ministry is. Now, I don't mean that critical, because I mean his dad laid a big foundation. If he had to start from scratch, like his dad did, he couldn't be doing what he's doing. But yet his dad laid the foundation. But yet Joel did something his dad couldn't do. So he, you know, this thing got handed off. And so that's the goal. When we leave, step down or whatever, it flourishes. You know, I think Maxwell said this, I heard him years ago say this, that success without a successor is not success. And so we got to empower the people around us, you know, to make decisions and lead. So, okay, we're out of time. We'll take a 15-minute break. Right, Ron? 15 minutes. We'll come back in 15 minutes. Pastor Philip will be next.